Last night was story time, wasn't it? Stories with a purpose, right? Our God used a man who dedicated himself to him. Did not forget William Miller's seeking as a boy to please God. And when God got a hold of him later, he really used him. Miller did not want to preach the 2300 days. God wanted him to preach it. If God hadn't wanted him to do it, he wouldn't have done it. That's very important when thinking about that whole experience. Well, last night was story time. Tonight, I want to show you some things from the Bible that will lead into singing a song, a new hymn, about these things that we're studying. This morning, pure Bible study on the theme, Best Man Available. I like to think that when God chose this Baptist layman, farmer, father of 8 children, to teach and preach the prophecies, that God did so because Miller was the best man available. That's the way God operates. Gets the best man he can. Miller was surely more right than almost all of the big city pastors and seminary professors of his day when he preached his characteristic understanding of the second coming. That is to say, most of these other people who had degrees and titles and big congregations in those days in America believed that the millennium was beginning with the conversion of the world, that the whole world was going to be converted by a spiritual, unseen, invisible coming of Christ, but that the literal coming of Christ, which they didn't have much to say about at all, would happen 1,000 years in the future. That was popular in America at the time. The rising up of movements to improve prisons and women and insane asylums, as they were known, lunatic asylums, the status of the slave, Bible societies, Sunday school movement. There haven't always been Sunday schools. These things were seen as leading inevitably to the conversion of the world and the beginning of the millennium in a quiet way with a spiritual coming of Jesus. And the literal second coming is put way off 1,000 years into the future. William Miller said, no, the world isn't going to get better and better. It's going to get worse and worse. He read it right out of the writings of Paul. Evil men shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. Men shall be lovers of their own selves, and so forth and so on. Miller taught that the only solution to this world's troubles was the literal, personal, visible return of Jesus Christ soon in the clouds of heaven. Was he right? Yes. He was more right on that subject than almost anybody else in America at the time. Now, he also taught the 2300 days, that there are 2300 years, that they began in 457 B.C., according to Ezra 7 and the 7th year of Artaxerxes, okay, that they would end in 1843, with the beginning, with the heavenly judgment. And therefore, it was time to preach the first angel's message, the hour of his judgment is come. Now, some of the Adventists think he was right on all those things too. But today we want to do a little Bible study and see how he got that way. And if I follow my timing right, we're going to end, I don't never know quite how these things are going to come out, but because I don't preach from detailed, written notes, but if it works out the way I have it planned, I'm going to leave you wondering about how he could have been so wrong. But tonight I'll straighten all that out, God willing. Let's see how far we can go, because we want to see how he was right, how the mistake that he made, because he did make a mistake, because he dated the second coming to 1843, corrected later to 1844, and there he was obviously wrong, though he was right about the judgment. And he was best man available. Now, let's look at some texts. Bible study. Matthew 24:15. Matthew 24:15. Jesus is speaking to his disciples, not to all the disciples. On the Mount of Olives, on this Tuesday night before the crucifixion, there were only four disciples with him. At least only four are named. Peter and Andrew, his brother, and James and his brother John. In preparing for the book God Cares, we got an artist to supply a picture of Jesus talking to the disciples on the Mount of Olives, Matthew 24 and 25. Here came a picture of Jesus with 12 disciples. And we had to send it back and say, no, there are only four that we know of. So they painted a new picture. Well, anyway, wish it was always that easy. Anyway, Matthew 24 and 25 are Christ's prophecy of the future. See, there's Daniel with its chapters predicting the future. And there's the book of Revelation, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto John to show him things which must surely come to pass. Revelation is a portrayal of the future, and Matthew 24 and 25 are. Again, in the books God Cares, those of you who have them, have noticed that the second volume doesn't begin with Revelation 1. It begins with Matthew 24 and 25. So we give Jesus a chance to get his prophecies in directly there, and then come back to Christ's revelation in the book of Revelation. This is a bridge between Daniel and Revelation. Okay, in Matthew 24:15, Jesus says to his disciples, for those who would follow and for us, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, or standing in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Now, Jesus here is speaking to his disciples, through them, to all his followers down through the ages, and to us today. Whoever reads the book of Daniel, understand. Now, the phrase abomination of desolation is one of the key phrases in the book of Daniel, which we're not going to look at this morning. Another key phrase in the book of Revelation is this word, understand. Some things were to be understood in the time of Christ. Some things in the book of Daniel were to be understood even in the time of Daniel. And some things in the book of Daniel were not to be understood until the time of the end. But understanding is a key word in the book of Daniel. Following me? Does this sound familiar to many of you? Okay, let's go back to the last part of Daniel. Daniel 12. Jesus said, let him that readeth Daniel understand. Now that means to understand what's available to be understood at any given time. Some things in Jesus' day, some things in Daniel's day, and some things not till the last days. In Daniel 12, verse 5. Then I, Daniel... Oh, excuse me. Verse 4, isn't it? Daniel 12:4. Memorize that in grade school. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, that's his book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. We're sure living in that time today. What a time for traveling. Even in my childhood, I can remember we stayed during a holiday in Cornwall. Who's from England and understands such terms? We took a vacation down by the ocean side, seaside. And my twin brother and I talked to the lady one day in whose house we were renting some rooms. And she indicated to us that she had never been to London. I mean, that was 200 miles away. She had no reason to go to London. She lived all her life in this little fishing village. And that was enough for her. And that was only in the 1930s. We've seen some changes, haven't we? Airports are filled with people moving. But some people say this running to and fro and knowledge will be increased is referring to the knowledge of Daniel and Revelation. Well, I think that is too. It's all part of the same picture. There's a great explosion of knowledge and travel, and around the world, people everywhere are coming to understand some of the prophecies today better than ever before. All right, now then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river and the other on that side of the bank of the river. And one said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever that it shall be for a time, times, and an half. And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. And I heard, but I understood. Whoops. I understood not. Then said I, O my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go thy ways, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly. And none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. So the time will come when the wise understand. By the way, that's a chiasm. Do you know what a chiasm is? Oh, everybody has to know what a chiasm is these days. A chiasm is a cross, and you have them in the middle of your brain. Did you know you all have a chiasm built right into you? It's where the optical nerves cross over from the left to the right and the right to the left, and without it, you'd be crazy. So chiasms are essential. Something like that, but anyway, I'm not a doctor. I'm a doctor, but not that kind. Well, notice it says, many shall be purified and made white, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. We went from the good to the bad, then to the bad, and back to the good again. They say, call it an X, because it's like, yeah, the wise people up here, and then the wicked people, and then the wicked people, and then the good people. Now, the pure people are up here, and the wise people are down here, and the wicked people are in here, in our little diagram, right? So now you know that the wise people are the pure people, and the pure people are the wise people. Now, we don't usually write things that way today. We like to go 1, 2, 3, 4 and have an outline and go down it. But in ancient times, the Hebrews and the Greeks and the Latins, they loved to write this way. You start out and go down an outline so far, and then back up and go down the outline backwards. They liked to do that. It made them feel good. Well, it did. They felt that things were tidy and had been done right. There are just many, many chiasms in the Bible. I'm looking to see if I can find any chiasms in this room. Now, usually you can find a couple. Yeah, here's a chiasm right here. I nearly missed you. See? Are you his wife?
Yeah.
Are you his wife? Yeah. Not the same man. He's different. We got a wife and a husband and a husband and a wife. See? People often sit that way so that the two men are together or the two wives are together. And they have a chiasm and they don't even know it. Don has a chiasm on his face. Ear, eye, nose, eye, ear. Now, what do you know? He says, what do you know? Here's chiasm. First little finger, you name the fingers, index finger, thumb, second index finger, little finger. It's chiasm. No, well, this is fun, sure. But it does help to explain some things in the Bible when we're alerted to the fact that Bible writers often wrote in the form of chiasm. The book of Revelation, the whole book is written as a chiasm. That's another study. But when you know that, it really helps in interpreting the prophecies of the seals and trumpets and some of those other features of the book that don't come clear right off. Well, that wasn't in my notes, and time's going by, so we better get on with what's in my notes. All right, now, the time and two times and half a time. Just touching on those here, not developing that either. How many times is this period, how many times are these times mentioned in the book of Daniel? Anybody know? Daniel 7:25, and there it is, Daniel 7:25. They're very important, the 1260 days, and they're not the focus of our study, but they do come into the study of the 2300 days. Daniel 7:25, the little horn of Daniel 7, he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of time. How many times are these times mentioned in the book of Daniel? Two times. Twice, that's right. A time and times, or two times, and the dividing of time, or half a time. How many times are those times? Oh dear. How many times is that time period mentioned in the book of Revelation? This isn't the 2300 days. These are what we call the 1260 days. How many times are they mentioned in the book of Revelation? Once, yes, you're all right on once, but you don't get full points for that. I mean, you're right. They are mentioned once in the book of Revelation. See if you can add them up. Revelation 11. Verse 3. Now, we had two times in the book of Daniel, didn't we? Okay, now, Revelation 11:3, I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days. How do you get that out of time, times, and dividing of time?
Day per year.
Well, if a time equals 360 days, that's a year, in round numbers, the way the Babylonians often counted time, and then two times are twice 360, what do you have then? 720, and half a time, half of 360 is 180, and you add those up and you get, I get, 1260. Zeros add up to zero, 8 and 2 is 10 and 6, 16 and carry 1, 2, 7 is 9, 3 is 12. 1260. Now, go back one verse, 11:2, and get this same period stated in different ways. The court which is without the temple, leave out and measure it not. This is all mysterious language, but can be interpreted. For it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall they tread underfoot. How long? 42 months. 30 days to a month. Times 42, you get 1260, right? Now, how many times is that in the book of Revelation already? Twice. So you people who said once were only partly right. Okay? Very partly right. Now come to chapter 12 and verse 6. The woman fled into the wilderness where she had the place prepared of God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. How many times have we got the 1,260 days in Revelation so far?
Three.
Come on down. Verse 14. 12:14. To the woman were given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness, into a place where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time. That's like Daniel puts it. How many times now for the book of Revelation?
Four.
And now in chapter 13, verse 5. And there was given him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. This sounds like that little horn in Daniel 7:25. And power was given unto him to continue 40 and 2 months. How many times are the 1260 day period mentioned in the book of Revelation? How many of you people said once? Aren't you ashamed of yourself? At least you knew it was there once. So that makes you a lot better than other people who didn't even know it was there at all. You all ought to get A for that, and then we go up to A+, A double plus for the people who got it right, okay? So 5 times in the book of Revelation, 2 times in the book of Daniel makes a total of... What's 5 and 2 plus 7? What's 5 and 2? He got it. 7. 7 times. It must be important. That's the 1260 days. It doesn't have to be mentioned 7 times to be important. It could be mentioned once to be important. But now, the 1260 days on our timeline run from... We're not going to go into this in detail. Just putting it up here on the board. 1798. This is the French Revolution. Tremendous watershed in world history. When I was going to write in God Cares, I came to the question of the French Revolution in Revelation 11, and I thought, nobody's interested in the French Revolution, so I'm not going to say much about it. And then I got to studying about it, and I knew I had to put something in. There's a turning point in our affairs today, in world affairs, French Revolution. The Catholic Church comes to a demise at this time, and its influence, a low spot, many other things spreading. And the beginning of it, 538, a great turning point in European history. Very appropriate period. I wrote my master's thesis on 538 in 1798. 43 years ago, you youngsters. All right. Study that out. That's incidental now. Some things, that was not to be understood. Part of my study was to see how different interpreters had understood the 1260 days. And it was interesting to see, as time went along, different interpreters said the 1260 days are going to end at this date in the future. At that date in the future. Well, at this date in the future. Well, at this date in the future. They didn't know. But they thought it would be soon, in the future. And then came the events of the French Revolution, the Pope taken prisoner, left to die in some foreign castle and not even buried for several days. He didn't know what to do with his body. Representing a low point in Christianity as a whole, not just in Catholicism, in Western Europe. And great turning point, world affairs. And now it's very interesting to see, suddenly, commentators point back and they say, it was then, it was 1798. It was back there in the 1790s that the 1260 days ended. Knowledge will run, let's see. Shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. The wise shall understand. As the time of the end came, people began to understand at last that prophecy. Now we haven't got to the 2300 days yet. Let's go to another one. What? So some things were to be understood in Jesus' day, and some things were not to be understood until the time of the end. And other things would be understood right away. What's the earliest thing in the book of Daniel? Some of the early things that were understood right away. Let me see. You know, many of you, you've studied Daniel 2. Let me put it up on the board here. Certainly William Miller studied Daniel 2. And we have what? This man, he's always portrayed with his arms folded. You know why they show him with his arms folded? Well, I think it's because the breast and arms were of silver. So they put him with his arms folded like this to get all the silver in one place. If he hung his arms down like this, then the silver would go down here and go past his brass tummy. I suppose that's the reason they do it this way. But when I always stand like this whenever I talk about Daniel 2, and then I feel silly afterward. The head of gold, this is Daniel 2. The breast and arms of silver, the belly and thighs of brass, the legs of iron, the feet, oh, you folks know this, iron and clay. The iron is still there, but clay is added to it. Now, when Daniel interpreted this dream to the king Nebuchadnezzar, who had even forgotten it, and Nebuchadnezzar says, yeah, that's what I did see. That's what I did see. Now, what does it mean? And Daniel said, there's no human being that can explain this, but there's a God in heaven who reveals the future. And then he said to Nebuchadnezzar, looking him right in the eye, "Thou art this head of gold." So right then, that prophecy was understood. Get it? That was understood right then. "Now after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and then a third kingdom of brass, and then one of iron. And whereas thou saw the iron mixed with miry clay, they shall not cleave one to another," and then so on. Now, this is Babylon. This is, we always say Medo-Persia, and that's the way it is in God Cares. But I've learned since, it really ought to be Media-Persia. Big deal, but then I'm that kind of a guy. Medo-Persia, Greece. What did I do wrong? Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm too close to my subject. Babylon, Media, Persia, thank you, Greece, Rome, the nations of Europe that Rome divided into. Barbarian tribes came swooping in from the north and carved up the Roman Empire as it was still alive and took pieces for themselves to digest. Daniel 2. So some things were to be understood right away. Some in the time of Christ and some not to the end time. Now, William Miller studied all of this. And let's see, when he studied Daniel 7, what empire, what symbols did he come across in Daniel 7? Beasts. All right, Daniel 7. What beast did he find here? A lion and a bear raised up on one side first. Next, leopard with how many heads?
Four
heads. And the next was a nondescript beast, a monster that defied zoological classification. How about that? All right. They're beasts. They're all monsters, so we don't know what to call it. A beast that had how many horns?
Ten
horns, minus three. Three were plucked up, and a little horn started up among them, which had eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things, and it waxed very large. And it thought to change times and God's law, and it harassed God's people, and power was given unto him for 1260 days. That's where that comes in here. Now, none of these things were identified to Daniel specifically, but he could certainly see the parallels if he chose to do so, and I'm sure he did. Now, in Daniel 8, which was a vision many years later, there is nothing for Babylon. Babylon was about to expire. And the first beast that he saw now was a ram. What is a ram? A male sheep. What's a female sheep? A ewe. E-W-E, right? A male. What did they do with male sheep in Bible times on Passover day and morning and evening? Sacrificed them. And then the other next animal he saw was a rough he-goat, a billy goat, with a big horn sticking out, which was the first king. And then he saw the horns. And a horn's broken, and another horn comes up and goes on down. And then in Daniel 11, he sees kings and great kings. And they're not symbols, they're people. And they fight and quarrel with each other, and the robbers of my people, and the king of the north, and so forth. We're not going to deal with them right now. But the same parallel, same empires in each case. Now, when Daniel wanted to know what all this meant, was it some of it explained to him in Daniel 8? Let's see, he heard also about a 2300 days in here. That's where the 2300 days comes in. Let's see, in Daniel 9, that we are reviewing here for some of you and new for the rest of us, Daniel 8. After he had seen the ram and the goat and the horns and the little horn, that are in there. Verse 13. I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me altogether, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. And it came to pass when I, even I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought the vision and had sought for the meaning, then behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man. It wasn't really a man, looked like one. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Uli, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man do what? Understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. But he said unto me, understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. As he was speaking, I was in deep sleep on my face upon the ground, but he touched me and set me upright, and he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed the end shall be. Now, Gabriel had seen in vision so far some animals and heard a time prophecy. Gabriel had been commissioned to make him understand all this, and Gabriel came and started to explain the animals, right? Behold, the ram which thou sawest, having two horns, are the kings of Media and Persia. So that's explained. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia. That's explained. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. That's Alexander the Great. That being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up with the power of that nation, but not in his power, and the latter end of their kingdom. Transgressors have come to the full, king of fierce countenance, down to standing dark senators shall stand up. His power shall be mighty, not by his own power, shall destroy wonderfully, prosper in practice, destroy the mighty and holy people, so forth and so on, stand up against the prince of princes. Verse 26. And the vision of the evening and the morning, which was told, is true. Wherefore, shut thou up the vision, for it shall be for many days. And I, Daniel, fainted. He was in his 80s by now. I fainted and was sick certain days. Afterward, I rose up and did the king's business, and I was astonished at the vision. Nobody understood it. Well, he did understand part of it. He understood about these empires that were coming, and he knew their names. The only part he didn't understand was about those 2,300 days. Now, it says the vision of the evening and morning I didn't understand. Let me explain that a little bit to you. In Daniel 8:14, where it says in the King James Version, under 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. The Hebrew says, I'm not really a Hebrew scholar, but I can read some of it. I took Hebrew twice, so you know what that means. I memorized James twice and some other things. Then you have to do them again. Unto 2,300 evening morning. It's an odd term. Evening morning. 2,300 evening morning. Then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. All commentators had fun with that verse. And some people these days have said, if William Miller had known Hebrew, he would have known that the Hebrew for Daniel 8:14 was 2,300 evening morning. And then he would have known that that really meant 1,150 days, and not 2,300 days at all, if he had known Hebrew. Well, 200-300 years before Christ, a group of erudite, learned Hebrew scholars were commissioned by Ptolemy V of Egypt to translate the Old Testament Hebrew into Greek, the version that came to be known as the Septuagint, because 70 people made the translation. When these Hebrew-speaking Hebrew scholars, chosen specifically by Ptolemy V, the king of Egypt, to translate the Old Testament Hebrew into Greek. When they came to Daniel 8:14, did they get all confused by this evening morning thing and have 1150 days? No. They translated into Greek evenings and mornings 2300 days. If William Miller had known Hebrew, he would have known just as well as by knowing the King James. So the 2300 days is 2300 days, right? 150 years, 100 years or so after Christ, another Jewish rabbi, Theodotion, translated the Old Testament into Greek. You see, the Christians were making such good use of the Septuagint translation to prove Jesus Christ was the fulfillment of the prophecies that some of the Jewish rabbis said, hey, we've got to have a whole new translation that doesn't prove Jesus really is the fulfiller of the prophecies. Well, that was hard to do. But even so, when Theodotion got to Daniel 8:14 and read in Hebrew 2300 evening morning, he translated it just like the Septuagint, those 70 other Hebrew scholars had done it. And he translated evenings and mornings 2300 days. Did he know Hebrew? Did William Miller need to know Hebrew? You don't need to know it either. Just take it the way it is in the King James Version. Did anybody who knew Hebrew ever think that these days were really years? There was a man called Nahawendi. Doesn't that sound pretty? If you folks ever have a girl, maybe you want to call her Nahawendi. Sounds pretty, Nahawendi. But you better ask the boys if they want a sister by that name. Okay? It actually was a man's name. A Jewish rabbi over in Iran, in Persia. And as he studied, this in the year 800 and something, time is going by, knowledge of Daniel is growing, he perceived these days to be symbol of years. And he interpreted the 2300 evening morning of Daniel 8:14 as 2300 days, even years. Now, he didn't know when to begin them. The time hadn't come yet to really understand the prophecy. It's going to be understood in the time of the end. But he thought it ran from such this a date to that date when the Messiah would come. He was a Jewish rabbi. Did he understand Hebrew? You bet he did. He talked it. He was a scholar in it. If only William Miller had known Hebrew, he wouldn't have done any better. He had it right in the first place. Hey, William Miller wasn't born. William Miller didn't come to this conclusion about the 2300 days or 2300 years until in the 1800s. Nahawendi, an influential Jewish rabbi, lived in the 800s. How many years are there between the 800s and the 1800s? 1,000 years. 1,000 years before William Miller came to understand the 2300 evening morning, the 2300 days, as 2300 years, a Jewish rabbi had preceded him in this. And Nahawendi was followed in turn by many rabbis who lived in the Middle East and in North Africa and in Spain over the next several hundred years. But when did they begin? When did the 2300 days begin? If you can figure out when they begin, then you can know when they end. Daniel fainted just before the angel wanted to explain that to him, and he couldn't do it. Now, what does it say in Daniel 9? The 70-week prophecy. Yesterday we looked at the 70-week prophecy again, reviewing it in Daniel 9:24-27, but we want to look at the beginning of it. In Daniel 9, Daniel is offering an earnest prayer for God's blessing on his people and God's forgiveness of his people's sins. It's a beautiful prayer. In this prayer, Daniel says again and again, forgive us we have sinned. Who's us? I and my Jewish nation. Because we have offered sacrifices to idols. We have blasphemed your name. We have done all kinds of horrible things. Did Daniel do any of those things?
No.
No. But he identifies himself with his people and says, forgive us, we have sinned. That's good advice for our homes. Dear God, why did you give me this pesky wife? She's so mean and horrid. That's one way to pray. Another one is, dear God, forgive us in our family. We quarrel so much. Please help us to love each other and be more forgiving. Help us. Get it? Dear Lord, our church is all split down the middle. We've got the Hatfields and the McCoys right here in our congregation. Oh, forgive those horrible McCoys. How much better to say, dear Lord, forgive us. We are all sinners. Please help us to love each other in our congregation. That can go. The school where we work, Lord, we're all at odds with each other. Forgive us. It just changes our attitude towards people. And when we start praying for them, like that. And we all sin it. Daniel prayed that kind of a prayer. And as he finished praying this prayer, God forgive us, remember Jerusalem, your temple's in ruins, because Nebuchadnezzar destroyed it. It's about time for it to be restored. An angel came to him and touched him. Wow, wouldn't you like that to happen? Okay, it doesn't happen very often, but it does happen once in a while. Whilst I was speaking, verse 21, in prayer, even the man who, Gabriel, he's an angel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly. Now, some people say that proves how fast you can fly to heaven, from heaven to earth, because he got from heaven down here while Daniel was praying. But then that assumes that he really was in heaven to begin with. Maybe Gabriel was helping somebody else out, and God simply reassigned him. By facts, you know. So I don't know about that one. But anyway, wherever he came from, he came fast. How fast can the angels fly? Fast enough. See, even the speed of light would be too slow coming from heaven to earth. Because that could take several thousand years. So anyway, they fly fast. Are we ever going to be able to fly like the angels? Yeah. I hope so. That'd be fast. God would rather send all the angels of heaven, all of them, to help us when we seek help in moments of temptation than to have the weakest of us fail. So the angels can fly fast enough to come to the rescue of any of us whenever we really want help. That's fast enough. Anyway, he came while he was still praying, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me. Oh, wouldn't you like to feel an angel touch you? Did you ever talk to your angel? Have you? Oh, good. So I'm not so queer. I have talked to my angel too once in a while. That's nice to do. And thank him for being so patient with me. I know if we thank Jesus, the angel can hear us thanking him, and he accepts that as enough appreciation. He informed me and talked with me. He talked with me and said, oh, Daniel, I am now come forth to give you skill and understanding. At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment came forth, and I am come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. The dear old man, 80-some years old, his enemies had tried to find something the matter with him and get him fed to the lions. He wasn't dearly beloved by his enemies, but he was dearly beloved by God. You're dearly beloved. Isn't that nice? Greatly beloved. It's enough just to be beloved, wouldn't it? Yes. Greatly beloved. Therefore, consider the matter. Understand the matter. There's the word understand again. And consider the vision. Now, the vision that he was concerned about was the vision of the 2300 days. A time prophecy. And sure enough, Gabriel starts right in talking about time. 70 weeks. Are determined. Now this word determined, take it apart. D-E-D. Determined. You ever hear of terminal cancer? Termination? Determined means something that has end set to it. Delimited would be another word. We're talking about something that is that's cut off here. It's set apart. Another word, and the way the Hebrew was used often, is amputated. 70 weeks are amputated. Now, when you amputate something, you always have to take it off something else, right? And the thing you amputate a thing from is always bigger than the thing you amputate. I mean, you don't amputate your body from your ear, do you? You might amputate your ear from your body. So these 70 weeks, that's 490 days, 490 years, are amputated from, delimited from, cut off from, determined in the old-fashioned word, the 2300 days. And so, if we've got up here the 70 weeks, beginning in, when? 457, and coming down here, the crucifixion and all, then that's going to be the same beginning date for the 2300 days that he was so concerned about. And the 2300 days are going to start on that same date and run down here to just after 1798, and you get 1843 until you add the one for the zero year. And that's where Miller got it from. And Miller was right. Miller was right. He was the most nearly right man in the world. That's why God chose him. But he was wrong. He thought that the 2300 days went not only to the judgment, but also to the second coming. Real quick now, I'm going to give you that little lineup that's going to leave you wondering, that I'm going to straighten you out on tonight. How did he think the 2300 days went to the judgment and the second coming? Follow real quick. Each of these empire sequences is followed by a climax where God has the victory. What is the God-given victory as the climax of Daniel 2? Everybody? The stone. A stone cut out with our hands smites the image upon the feet of it and grinds the image to powder. It becomes as fine as the dust of the threshing floor and is blown away by the wind, and the stone becomes a great mountain and fills the earth. And the kingdom and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heavens is given to the saints of the Most High. All right. Stone. What was to happen at the end of the 2300 days? The sanctuary, whatever that means, is to be cleansed . But if you look in your Bibles, we don't have time now because our time's up. We can look again tonight. The climax of Daniel 11 is the first verse or two of Daniel 12. At that time shall Michael stand up. Michael shall stand up. There'll be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. At that time shall thy people be delivered, every one that's found written in the book. And many of them that sleep in the dust shall awake, some to life and some to everlasting contempt. Resurrection, that sounds like the second coming, doesn't it? Time of trouble, that's the end of the age. All right, so we'll put in T of T and resurrection and so on. Here, that's the climax there. What is the climax of Daniel 7? What we're going to look at tonight. What is it? The judgment shall sit. The judgment. We're going to look at this in some detail tonight. The judgment shall sit. Now, William Miller argued in his mind this way. If the empire sequences are parallel, and they are, then the climaxes must be parallel. And they are. If you can date any one of them, you can date them all. And now that we're in the end time, God has made us to understand the prophecy of the 2300 days. And it shows us that the sanctuary is to be cleansed around the year 1843, he said. Then you can date the judgment, and Michael standing up, and the second coming when the stone destroys the nations of the earth. They all have the same date because they're all in parallel with each other. Now, I'll warrant most of you weren't smart enough to think of that. Do you see what I mean? William Miller was, he made a mistake here that only a really good Bible student would make. He made the mistake partly because he was the best man available. He knew his Bible well enough to make a mistake like this. But he was very nearly right even so. There's a chiasm here and a few other things that I'll talk about tonight. Will you come back and get the next part of this?
Yeah.
All right. You want to know how to straighten this all out? Okay, then you be sure and be here. And that means that in between, we must all be as healthy as we can be, right? And exercise right and eat right so we can all be bright and right at 7 o'clock tonight. Shall we pray? Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for the Bible. Thank you for giving us the privilege of living in the end time, when even these remaining mysteries of Daniel were set to be understood. But help us to see the significance of these things as they affect our daily lives. For Jesus' sake, amen.
You have been listening to Dr. C. Mervyn Maxwell in association with American Cassette Ministries. International copyright 1994, American Cassette Ministries. All rights reserved. Christian ethics prohibit reproduction in any form. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. For additional cassettes by American Cassette Ministry speakers, please call our toll-free order line 1-800-233-4450. Thank you for ordering American Cassette Ministry cassettes. Your prayers and continual financial support are extremely important, as together we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ.